Yeah, my name is Nimo Bassi, the executive director of Friends of the Earth Nigeria, otherwise known as the Environmental Rights Action. We work on environmental human rights issues, especially with relation to actions of transnational oil corporations and other eco-destroyers.
Yeah. Oil's a fantastic source of wealth, or that's the perception of it. And yet you mention in your talk that, in a way, oil has made Nigeria poorer. Could you explain the logic of that, how oil makes countries poorer?
Oil has made Nigeria poorer in very many ways. Basically, it was the advent of commercial crude oil exploitation in Nigeria that began the slide into corruption, brought corruption into the politics, into economic relations. It destroyed the basic infrastructure and destroyed and lowered the productive capacity of industry, because everybody just looked for a slice of the action from the petroleum dollars that was coming into the country. And because oil became the major foreign exchange earner for Nigeria, agriculture was abandoned by the government, and virtually every other activity that used to sustain the nation was completely forgotten about. And you know, because oil is extracted from the Niger Delta, piped into ships along the Atlantic coast of Nigeria, so you don't really need much other infrastructure rather than pipelines to take the oil away. And so the internal infrastructure, the railway system, the road network was left to decay and to rot. And all this further lowered the productive capacity of industry that were already sited in some parts of the country. So over the years, oil has been a major contributor to the decay in infrastructure, to the rise in corruption, to the rise in violence, especially in the Niger Delta. And oil itself was a major reason for the military to stay in power for over three decades. So all this cumulatively just put the Nigeria on the downward slide.
Could you maybe just describe some of the environmental impacts that the oil industry has then had in the Niger Delta?
Right from when the first the oil corporations came in to exploit the Niger Delta, they've had major impacts in terms of forest deforestation. And this starts from when the seismic lines are being cut. You know, they cut these lines at least 1 meter wide and several up to 6,000 kilometers long cumulatively, if you add it all up. And vast pockets of forest have been cleared for oil installations. So in terms of degradation of forest stock in Nigeria, oil exploration, not extraction, now has already been a major cause. And then during extraction of oil and transportation have had major environmental impact in terms of oil spills. There are thousands of oil spills. The oil corporation themselves admit that they have hundreds of oil spill incidents every year. And these are mainly due to faulty equipment, faulty flow stations, manifolds, and wellheads, and pipelines. And most of these pipelines have been there for decades. They ought to have been replaced. At the point, there was a strong campaign for replacement of pipeline by activists, and then Shell began to replace some of the pipelines. But these are slowed down. So we still have oil spills due to equipment failure. And when this oil spill is spilling into farmlands, is spilling into waterways, our people depend on water from the rivers, from the creeks, from the streams, for use, for drinking, for cooking, and for recreation. And so when these are polluted by crude oil, it immediately cuts the people off from a resource that they need for daily living. And moreover, these are oil spills also go into farmlands, making the places unusable, and also into forest. We have spills into forest. And this has been another way by which oil activities have degraded the environment, because the oil spills have never really been cleared. Whenever there's a spill, minimal weak efforts are made by the oil corporations to clean the spills. And they can do this because the government is not enforcing environmental laws, the few weak laws that we have are not being enforced with any sense of purpose. And so they just use shovels and spades and pumps to pick the, or just turn the soil to bury the crude that was spilled. And sometimes when they just get tired, the contractors that they use, who don't have skills in cleaning or spills, simply set the spill, the crude, on fire. And this way they've burnt many forests, and they've even burnt one or two rivers. Well, that's just part of the degradation. Another major way by which oil activities degrade the environment is through gas flaring. And gas flaring in Niger Delta is a very wasteful, noxious, objectionable activity. The gas that's been burnt in Niger Delta is estimated to be worth about $2.5 billion every year. And this, in a country where you have most people living on less than $1 a day, it's a gross waste and an environmental issue, because this gas flares burn gases at very inefficient levels. So it's a release of soot into the atmosphere, release of greenhouse gases adding to global warming and climate change, and then of course incidents of acid rain, which the oil corporation contest and which they admit occasionally. And it's a whole lot of problems for the people living in the Niger Delta. The people have been cut off from the environment, and this environment is the life of the people, because they live directly with the resources found in the environment, and they're being attacked on every side.
What do you think is the way to break the dependency of the Nigerian economy on oil? I mean, given that natural resources have been destroyed to such a great extent already, how can you break that cycle?
Well, I think the cycle could very easily be broken, but that may not be possible, because the country is so tied up with the oil economy at the moment, and oil prices are going up. So a lot of money, resources are coming into the hands of the government, because the simple thing would be simply to shut down oil exploration, because if we really look at the impact has been negative. So why do you want to keep on compounding the situation? It will mean, let's take a break. And this one of the things we demand is a moratorium on new oil field explorations, to give time to take stock of the environmental degradation that is taking place, and to find ways to reclaim or take remedial action to reclaim the environment, to get the environment to be restored, or just to give the land a time to regrow and regain its vitality. Another way is that ultimately the oil corporations are going to shut down their own, because with growing rise, increasing rise of cost of petrol, and the fact that we've almost more or less reached the peak of oil production and discovery, the oil itself is going to run out. It's not a renewable resource, so it's going to be exhausted one time or the other. And the question is, how soon would this happen? But we believe that before the oil is exhausted, the same corporation that are causing this environmental destruction are possibly going to switch into development of new energy form, and over which they will also have monopoly. What they're looking for, they want to keep the world in their pocket for as long as possible. And so eventually they're going to abandon the crude oil activities. But this is going to be a great danger for those living in the oil fields, because right now oil is yielding a lot of resources, and nothing's been done about the environment. By the time it's no longer attractive, these oil corporations, Shell, Ajib, Chevron, Mobil, Exxon, they're simply going to pick their suitcases and leave the Nigerian environment, and leave the people to suffer the degradation, and leave whatever they've left behind. They're not going to. This is why I want to hold them accountable now, before it is too late. Now is the time for Shell, for Mobil, for Chevron to clean up their act, not just their language, to clean up the environment and change.
And we're talking here at the G8 summit, what do you think the role of the G8 is, and why have you come here to advance your cause?
Yes, I came to the pre-G8 activities principally because I believe that international solidarity is needed to stop the actions, degraded, destructive actions of transnational corporations. I have more confidence in people power than in government power. I don't have any confidence in the G8 itself, the leaders of these countries who are going to meet later on this week. I don't have any confidence that they can do anything good, because they have all been bought by the corporations. They are like puppets speaking for corporations, and they are just like appendages, errand boys of corporations. And so the power to restructure the world, to bring about change, to stop transnational corporations from keeping their fangs and teeth in our necks, will only come from the mass action of the people. This is why I'm here, and this is my hope.
Actually, one thing, in your talk you talked not just about people, but particularly about the role of women in the struggle in Nigeria.
Yeah.
What is particular about that? Can you just say a bit more about that?
For many years, the oil corporations were used to dealing with men, and they've paid up armies of men who are not under the employment but who receive wages. I mean, a wage ought to be paid when you've provided service. And so they pay people who are not employed, they're just on the payroll to receive pay, and so they must receive some kind of service. And so these men are like a reserve army for the oil corporations. They defend the interests of the oil corporations, and they keep the communities divided, and they keep the tension. And then the people cannot make solid demands, collective demands from the oil corporations. And so it pays them to pay off a few individuals. But they've not done this with the women. They've only paid the men and the chiefs and the corrupt elites. And so now the women have found that. In fact, when the women started the action, they did not consult the men. The men were taken by surprise that women would use their power, both the naked power and their collective power, to occupy all installations and demand discussion, not just with the officials of the oil corporations in the field, but the executives from the boardrooms. And this is what made it very significant, and it became very definitive. Again, that just marked the beginning. And as I said, during the talk, the women were asking for things for their husbands and their sons, not even for themselves. But ultimately, they are redefining their demands. You know, I don't know whether this happens anywhere else in the world, but the oil corporations sign what they call Memorandum of Understanding with communities. And these are just like gentlemen agreement, which they never really fulfill. Maybe eventually the communities may start asking for binding contracts and agreements, you know, so that you could force them in the court to keep to what they agreed to do. Because they promise one thing today, they do nothing about it. But right now, a corporation like Chevron is no longer signing Memorandum of Understanding with communities. They're signing what they call Global Memorandum of Understanding. So they'll pack several communities together and sign one piece of paper about what they're going to do. So now it will be much more difficult for them to be held accountable, because they will now, instead of dividing people within a particular community, I can see that strategy would be to put one community against the other one. And then the whole issue, they fall like a pack of cards. So women, the entrance of women would certainly help to provide checks about the reckless actions of these corporations.
One final thing, I suppose. I know you're a poet, and I was wondering if it'd be possible for you to recite a poem.
A poem?
For the radio.
I could, yeah. And in fact, it's good you talked about poetry. Most of my poems have been related to environmental struggle for environmental justice, and it's been a pain to me, because I would like to do poems about flowers, landscapes, love, but I've not had that privilege. I've always been writing poems for struggle. I've got 4 collections of poems right now. The first one is called Petrus and Cockroaches. Were written about the dictatorship in Africa, across Africa, with some humor anyway. The second collection is called Poems on the Run. When I was declared wanted by the police under the military in Nigeria for a period of time, I was on the run, and I did all the poems in that collection. Thereafter, I was in detention. One of the times I was in detention for about 6 weeks at a stretch. I wrote another collection of poems called Intercepted. But the one from which I read today is called We Thought It Was Oil, But It Was Blood, which are poems we use for campaigns and been written on the campaign trail on various issues, on oil issues, on climate change issues, anti-tobacco poetry, on slavery, and issues like that. But I can do a poem today that have not, that's not been published yet, and it's about hunger. Hunger, you know, hunger is a big issue in Africa, and we like to say that people are not hungry because there's no food. People are hungry because they don't have access to food. Poverty is engineered. Poverty does not happen by accident. Africa is not a poor continent. Nigeria is not a poor nation. But because of structural adjustment programs and other evil devices of the World Bank and IMF, who were set up to oppress people, this has been the outcome. So the issues like debt relief and so on are just like, it's just like, you know, you did harm and you're just looking for a way to gain, because you took a little step towards kind of changing the situation. This poem is called, it was done in a campaign in Mozambique. We had a conference on food, hunger, and genetically modified organisms. It's called Mountains of Food, Oceans of Hunger. So I'll read it. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. How can this remain the lot of our peoples? From the south and from the north, from the east and from the west. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and we dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. Proud peoples from fertile soils, we stamp the earth with bouncing steps, once the rulers of the world. Today we are the wretched of the earth, hands stretched out with empty bowls. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger, diets altered beyond recognition. How can we know what we are eating? A simple question, what did you have for lunch, becomes a subject for scientific debate. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger, once enslaved with chains, today ensnared by our belly. Shall we eat or shall we not? If we are hungry, must we fill our stomachs with poison? We have a right which can't be denied. We must decide what we eat and when and how. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. We stand on mountains of food, yet food aid is forced on us. GE corn, GE soya, and what have you. Many more still undergoing tests. Where did you see such milk of wickedness? When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. Climate change sells us drought. When it rains, we are sent to treetops. Free trade traders trade us sorrows. WTO rules, World Bank, IMF, the FAO of the United Nations abuse, disunite, fool, and bemuse a trusting world. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. The secret is out. The farmers are awake. Consumers arise. Vigilance is the word. Grab your night vision goggles. Surveillance is the key. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. The suspicion of seeds, the suspicion of foods, the suspicion of forced aid, the even secret aids. This is vital wisdom. When our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat. Mountains of food, oceans of hunger. Brave Mozambicans, proud liberators, we are here in Maputo. Farmers, consumers, helpers, environmental warriors, inspired by the land, we raise our fist and sound the alarm. As we march to make poverty history, we shout Never again shall we be taken for a ride, because when our stomachs rumble, we sing the same song and dance to the same beat.